Broadcasting live inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brian here on site. We're at the Decoy in Spring Branch. Come hang out with us. Good way to get out of the rain. Happy hour specials each and every day. Awesome spot. They're having a volleyball tournament here this weekend, too. So make sure you get out to the Decoy all the time tonight to see us, and then this weekend to play in that volleyball tournament. Astros win a baseball game yesterday. They're kind of rolling. 6 of 7 now for the Houston Astros. 1-4 in a row. This team that's maybe, are they heating up? Dare I say they're heating up?
I honestly feel good about it. I hope so. I don't know exactly what to make of it because of the fact that we've said already, look, the schedule and the way it plays out, they're not playing the best of opponents, but it doesn't matter at this point. You got to take advantage of every opportunity to get back in this thing. The fact that you're 5.5 5.5 out of the division is fantastic. The fact that you are within arm's length, I would call it, and you're playing bad teams, take advantage of the schedule. Keep doing whatever the hell you're doing, whether it's squeaking out victories or getting wins, no matter how you go about it. But take care of some business right now and make this thing interesting again.
Yeah, Fromber gave you what you absolutely needed. Like, the bullpen killed you, or the bullpen was just, you know, Dusty Baker used to say that they were, what was the old saying he had? They were upside down. The bullpen would get upside down. Mm-hmm. And the bullpen got upside down after Blanco got ejected after 3. You had to go to everybody in the bullpen after game 2. And we were talking about yesterday, Fromber has to go distance, and Fromber not only goes distance, but he goes really good distance. 7 shutout innings. Seth Martinez pitches the final 2 innings. You're able to save the bullpen, so you're actually in pretty good shape immediately after that game yesterday. Because if he goes 5 and you have to throw Martinez for 2, and then you're looking, you're searching for somebody else, maybe it's Dubin, but it would really put you in a bad spot today. For him to kind of fix the problem immediately is obviously huge because you win the game yesterday, but it also sets you up for the games that you have in store coming up in the next few days.
Absolutely. It's almost, you know, we talked about it when you and I were talking about the game the night before, that the unsung hero was Hader being able to go 2 and do something so you didn't have to see Dubin in the extra inning. Well, I think Seth Martinez gets your unsung hero last night because of the fact that he did what you said. He gave you 2 innings. It wasn't completely out of reach. I mean, it got a little interesting in the ninth, but the fact that, you know, you won the game 3-0. He didn't do anything to hurt you. He saved your bullpen because you know damn well with Javier on the mound tonight, just like you were hoping to get, you know, an extended outing from Fromber, normally that's regardless is going to be 5+. He gave you more than that, and now because you don't know what to expect from Javier overall, and even if you get good Javier, he's probably not going to give you very much more than 5 to where you're going to need some guys coming out of that pen, and now you're fresh to be able to do that.
Yeah. It's scary that Javier, after what he did in his last start, is the starter today.
It is.
You don't really know what to expect. It's almost like it's like last year towards the final month and into the playoffs where, like, you had no idea what Javier was going to give you. And that's kind of the feeling you have going into his start today because he was so poor in that first start back in Detroit.
Now, it's a better situation because you've won the first 3. You're going to win the series no matter what. You've got a ton of momentum going. But this is the kind of guy that you're relying on to be a part of how you get better and stronger and more dominant as you move down the tracks so that this team can get back to being a contending type team. He's got to be a part of that. So you're easy to wipe that one under the rug last time by saying first game back, he's got to get, you know, he's got to kind of get his wherewithal back with him and his arm's got to get back up. This is the time right now where you want to keep this thing rolling down the track, and you don't need a speed bump based on another bad start from Christian Javier.
Yeah, I don't know if I can just dismiss it as first game back, though. I don't look at that start. I'm like, it's first game back. He's cool. No problem. I have faith in him. Like, I don't dismiss it at all.
I'm not saying I have faith in him, but I'm saying the fact that he took a neck injury that he just slept wrong, which wasn't supposed to be much at all. He did miss some time, so you're wondering, like, you know, how rusty was he? I'm not telling you by any stretch of the imagination. I've got total confidence in Christian Javier. I'm saying that's a guy that they need.
Oh, yeah.
But if that one was the one that you just say, hey, he was rusty, coming back, hadn't pitched in a while, so be it. But that's got to stop now because this team is finally starting to play like we expected them to play all year. and they can't afford to have any hiccups.
Yeah, that's just not back of mind. It's like in the front of my mind. Like that outing is in the front of my mind with how bad that he was in Detroit. And if he pitches well today, then I think we can say, okay, more back to mind because he got back on track. It was he just wasn't ready, et cetera, et cetera. But that's at the front of my mind when I'm watching him pitch tonight. And, you know, hopefully he gets back. Obviously, you want him to get back on track because he is a critical piece, especially in this 10-day stretch now where you're not going to have Ronel Blanco.
Right.
Because you wanted to start a six-man rotation. Ronel Blanco gets suspended for 10 games. So you're going to go like to this hybrid five-man, then you're going to flip it back to a six-man, and he's going to pitch in the second half of that turn through a six-man rotation. So, you know, you need, and plus you're only 2 days away from the bullpen being upside down. So, like, you have to have Javier, he has to make it through, like, four or five innings at the worst, at the very bare minimum, because your bullpen would get upside down quickly again after you kind of fixed it yesterday, thanks to Fromber and Seth Martinez.
And you hate the thought of the fact, and I heard Joe and Paul talking about this, you hate the thought of the fact that he may just have to tough it out even if he has another bad outing and gets lit up and gives up a bunch in a short period of time. I don't want to consider that scenario. I hope to God that's the last possible scenario that happens. You do want him to give you some innings, but the last thing you want him to have to do it is because he got hammered again and he was not even close to the Javier that you're wanting, needing, and expecting, because that would suck.
Yeah, but even then, like, he's not going to throw more than 90 pitches.
No.
But like, they're going to protect Christian Javier, especially only a second start
but
back.
When they were talking about you, they got to get, you know, they were asking the way we normally ask about what do you want, what do you expect, what do you think you're going to get out of Javier. They said 90 pitches. I was like, he might do that in three and a half
yeah.
innings. He's never short on pitches no matter what.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like you have to protect Javier, and he is a guy who can build a pitch count pretty quickly because he's a high strike guy. He's a high walk guy, pitches deep into counts, rarely throws a first pitch strike. It's pretty annoying. 713-780-ESPN, your thoughts on Fromber, Seth Martinez yesterday, Game 3, Astros. Are they getting hot? Are you starting to believe this hot streak, too? The fact that they've won 6 of 7, the fact that they've won 4 games in a row, are you starting to buy into this for the Houston Astros? Is this who they are? I thought it was interesting, Fromber talking after the game, because Fromber Valdez has made 7 starts now this year, 6 starts this year. Yiner Diaz has caught 2 of them. He caught the very first game of the year that Fromber pitched was the opening day, and then he caught yesterday. Every start in between was Victor Caratini. And it seemed like Victor Caratini was turning into the personal catcher for Fromber Valdez. I kind of thought he was going to be the personal catcher for Fromber Valdez. Yesterday that flipped. He was asked about it post-game, Fromber was. And Fromber said, look, we have a good relationship, Yiner and I don't care who catches me. So I think we can put that notion to bed that it doesn't have to be Caratini catching Fromber. And I think we can put the notion to bed that Fromber has a personal catcher on this year's team. Last year he certainly did. This year I don't think that is the case.
I think that's all fine and dandy, but that's as long as – because the way I think that the team probably was looking at this was, of the two guys, because of his instability sometimes mentally, emotionally, when he's out on the hill, you'd like a veteran out there, a guy that's been there, done that, that can possibly be that kind of elder statesman voice for him. That's fine and dandy with Yiner as long as it's all cruising and moving and working. But it's going to be interesting to see, because last night he almost had a hiccup when he got the balk called on him, and you could tell as much as he was trying to just play it off and he wanted to get back on the mound and pitch, he was a little rattled after that.
His tell is when he smiles. Like, he tries to deflect like his emotion by smiling. His outward expression is trying to contrast his inner expression and his inner attitude. I study psychology on
is
the
that
weekends.
That, is that what they call it, the awkward smile?
Yeah, maybe awkward, maybe
uncomfortable. Smile. Yeah.
I think he's trying to mask his inner feelings more than anything else. A lot of times, like, we as humans will mask our inner feelings with how we're trying to show the world our reaction on the outer. And I think that his outer expression is he tries to smile. He tries, oh, no big deal. I got this. You guys don't freak out that I'm bipolar and I can be a helter-skelter. Don't worry about that. But inside, he's boiling and he's hot, and it does rattle him. Anytime, if I'm a catcher, and look, I think this is, you know, Yiner Diaz, listen up. Victor Caratini, listen up. The moment you see Fromber Valdez act that way, mound visit. You got to go.
Doubt.
You have to, because that is him trying to mask his inner reaction. Because I was like, okay, like the balk, and he did balk.
He did.
Fromber, I mean, he was in the windup. And he stepped back with his right foot, not his pivot foot. So he balked. And he said afterwards, he's like, I didn't think I balked at the time, which made me think that, okay, he saw it and he realized that he did balk. But he was like, hey, no big deal. Runner at second base. We're up 3 runs. No big deal. He's trying to smile, pitch out of it. But he's kind of rushing. And it's like, okay, well, I kind of like that Fromber's putting that in the back of his mind. He's letting it go. But then he walks the guy right away. So, like, is the moment you see him start to, like, oh, you know, I got this, smile, 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 you got to go out and you got to talk to Fromber and, like, hey, calm down a minute. Breathe. Let's take our time here.
And you know what? It's not just them. It's Miller and Murphy, too. It's watching that, knowing that, and being able to pounce before it's too late on that, because you're right. I mean, he's going to go be more aggressive. He's going to rush it a little bit more in terms of, you know, trying to zone out on that and zone back into the zone. And in the process, he might make a mistake, leave something up, and suddenly a really good outing could turn into, you know, a lot of trouble because of that. And the whole team's got to be aware of it, because it's something that is vital to the fact that you've got to manage his emotions if you're going to get the best out of one of your top two guys in your rotation. And we know already that that's who he is, and that's what he looks like he's back to doing.
It can't be Murphy, though, because Murphy's in the bullpen.
Right. Like, I'm just saying from the pitching coach's standpoint with the video and everything like that, everybody's got to know that that's part of the equation.
Well, he's not supposed to have live video in the bullpen now, Blinkers. Remember, the Astros got in trouble for having live video.
I'm saying that's to know the tendencies. Like, you watch film after every time you pitch. At a certain point, it's not just about...
Well, you're saying mound visits.
Pitches and location. Okay, but I'm saying, one guy can get out there. The other guy is basically working with him between starts to know, hey, we all got to be on a head on a swivel when he starts doing those kind of things and gets fidgety, because all hell could break loose.
The catcher ERA for Fromber this year, and how much do we want to put stock in this? Yiner Diaz has caught him twice. Victor Caratini's caught him four times. It might not matter a whole lot. Yiner Diaz, whenever he's catching Fromber has a 2.31 ERA. Now, of course, that took a huge help yesterday. But opponents only hitting 184 against Fromber when Yiner's catching, 5.25 OPS. When Victor Caratini is catching four games, he has a 3.24 ERA, which is still good, and a 2.80 opponent batting average, OPS 7.33. So, like, the numbers, and again, I'm not even putting value in this. I'm just throwing it out there in case you put value in it. He's actually pitched better to Yiner this year than he has Victor Caratini.
Look, we've gotten past the point of having to deal with an Ofer with the offensive capabilities of a Maldonado, and we know that Yiner's going to be the more everyday catcher now, and he should be. And so if Fromber, you know, can handle it and Yiner can handle Fromber, I really don't care. I would obviously want Yiner's bat in the lineup, but I don't want it at DH if I don't have to, because then you can keep Yordan there and you can get another bat in the lineup somewhere else.
Swaba tweeted this earlier this morning. The Astros team ERA since May 9th, so what is that, a week, I guess? 2.71 ERA, which in that span is the second best in Major League Baseball. Starters ERA in that time, 3.25. Reliever ERA, 2. This is the Astros pitching staff we wanted to see. And it's tough to do that when you have fringe pitchers, whenever you have J.P. France pitching a lot, whenever Hunter Brown was getting crushed. Who else made a start? The Blair Henley guy made a start.
There you go.
And then you had, you know, Eric Geddy, but he's kind of in your rotation right now, but he's been a little bit better.
Blown up.
And then you've had a couple of guys in the bullpen that have thrown sporadic innings, like Dylan Coleman has pitched an inning. I think Ortega has even pitched an inning. So now that you're getting a little bit of stability with the pitching staff, it's like, okay, this is what the pitching staff can do. And if you can have a starter ERA at 3.25, a reliever ERA at 2, I don't think you're going to sustain a 2.71 ERA for a long period of time. But if you can have a top three, top five ERA in baseball from this point going forward, you're going to win a lot of baseball games, and I don't think that it's a coincidence that the Astros have won a bunch of baseball games in a row and have won 6 of their last 7.
Yeah, now figure out runners in scoring position.
Figure it out. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP, listener line, Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Decoy in Spring Branch. Come hang out with us. Drink specials, happy hour until 7 o'clock. You can't beat that. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on ESPN Houston on YouTube. You search ESPN Houston on Twitter. He's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's a Thursday, so Bad Take Boulevard coming up a little bit later. We'll dive into the Houston Texans schedule release that came out yesterday. Our thoughts on it. Did the NFL do them some favors? Did they not do them some favors? We'll get into all of that. But let's talk about the Astro offense from yesterday. Get your thoughts as well. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, Astros pitching staff done good. Framber Valdez, good Framber. He done good. You needed it. Clutch performance by Framber. Hopefully he can be Framber that is Framber that can be a top three Cy Young guy. Seth Martinez, two-inning save, second career save. Got a little bit dicey but gets the double play to end the game. That's great. That's great. We're going to talk about this Houston Astros offense that scored three runs off a guy named Aaron Brooks, who is the third most popular Aaron Brooks that has ever played a sport that's named Aaron Brooks. And that's a journeyman that hadn't pitched since, like, 2022.
Yeah, that was a little interesting. That's probably why, when you're looking at only a 3-0 lead, that I was a little bit more concerned when Framber and then later Seth Martinez got into some sticky situations. No pun intended. Bregman got a sack fly, so I guess you could constitute that as being staying somewhat hot.
Let's tell the whole story on that sacrifice fly.
Go ahead.
I mean, the dude forgot how many outs there were.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm just saying. I mean, I'm looking for positives to try. Bregman's got to stay hot, right? Everybody's worried about is Bregman hot or not and staying hot. Look, it wasn't a great offensive performance overall. You take every bit of it that you can get right now. I can't explain it. I don't know if that's, no one had anything on this guy, hadn't seen him in a while, didn't know what to expect or not. They took him for granted. I can sit there and try and grasp at straws for you, but especially at the fact that they put him back to baseball lately, yeah, it was a little scary, a little dicey.
I'll say that credit they scored early. That way you can give your starter a lead. I think that's, like, if you're going to score three runs in a game, I think it's good to do it early because now you have the other team that's playing catch-up, and then you give your pitcher a little bit of, a little bit of a runway. You give them a little bit of cushion. I think it helps when a starting pitcher has cushion. I think they pitch better when they're up three runs as opposed to, like, a tie game or trailing by one where you feel like you have to be so fine. So I'll give them the credit for that. Credit that they scored early. Other than that, was not a good offensive day. Maybe it can lead to an offensive explosion today. Aaron in Mid-County, I would have liked more offense last night, but I won't complain. That's the other thing. You win. Like, if you were to lose 6-3, well, the offense scored three runs off Aaron Brooks. Can you believe that? You win 3-0. It's easier to accept the offense. 7-5-6-0, Astros look like a regular baseball team. I was there Monday and Wednesday. Sick flex, man. It's the same team just starting to come together, we hope. But last night, three runs was enough. I agree with that. And then 3-6-6-3. They played the freaking A's, for goodness sakes. Only reason they're hot. So there's the Debbie Downer of the bunch. There's the buzzkill of the bunch. What's a 6-7-8 area code?
You're usually good at this game.
6-7-8 area code Atlanta, Georgia. So that's who that
Braves
texter
fan guy.
That's who that texter was in Atlanta, Georgia. Here's the thing, is like, yeah, I mean, they are the Oakland single A's, but here's the counterpoint to that. They're above you in the standings. And they're still above you in the standings, even after you've taken the first three. So, like, are the A's good? No. Are they better than they were last year? Yes. Whenever you're 15 games, I know it wasn't that low, but whenever you're as many games below 500 as the Astros got, does it really matter who you're winning against? I'd argue that it doesn't.
I think the other thing that you just basically throw into the equation is you play the schedule that you're given, and you realize this is what good teams are supposed to do. So it's not good that you're going to sit there and whine and complain that you're playing the A's. The start of your schedule was pretty damn tough, and it was pretty competitive. So the fact that you're getting a pocket in your schedule that's a little weaker that you're supposed to take advantage of, and they're doing that, I mean, we'd be hearing it loud and clear from a lot of people if they weren't doing what they're doing right now. So it is the A's. So what? The A's are a better team than they would have been in the past, and you're doing what you're supposed to do if you truly are a team that's going to compete at the end of the year.
Virginia says texters are downers. Sports LM says that I hate Atlanta. So maybe we have a little texter twitch war going on again. 6-3-8-1, Framber did exactly what he needed, plus some. If that seventh didn't get a little crazy, he may have went in the eighth. I don't know about that. I think he would have been done regardless.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think that, again, I don't think that the fact that you dodged a bullet with whatever he had going on, you still don't want to take too many chances. He had thrown enough pitches. He had some high leverage situations to get out of. And the fact that he gave you seven, even when we were talking about it last night, I would have been fine with six. Yeah, I think he was done regardless, and you could live with two innings from just about anybody else.
Yeah, I like getting a pitcher out on a strong note too. I think that you can take something from that. Like, hey, he's at 90 pitches. You might be able to get another guy, maybe two guys, but should you just take him out and have put the bow on a good start? I believe in the second, especially in the regular season. So I don't even if there wasn't trouble in the seventh, I don't think that he comes back out for the eighth. Could be wrong. But I don't think so. There's been a lot of people that have talked about Mauricio Dubon at first base. He played first base yesterday. He's played more first base since Joey Loperfido come up than Joey Loperfido has. Loperfido hasn't touched first base since he's come up. Are any concerns about Dubon playing first for you?
Not for me. No, I mean, I don't think he's too small. I think that I trust his glove enough, and the fact that, you know, he's just your utility guy anyway with a steady bat. I'm fine with the fact that if you want to work him into the rotation, because it really looked like Singleton needed a day off.
I know Ronel Blanco's suspended, but come on now.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I was just joking because you said rotation.
Oh, yeah.
The first base
mix.
Yeah,
but I'm saying because you looked at Singleton, aside from the last game in Detroit, he just looked like he was gassed. He looks like he had this whole plan every day thing as much as he wanted it. He looked like he was a little worn down. So if you can work a rotation in, and that's Dubon instead of Loperfido, because you can't take anything away from Loperfido, who got another hit last night, and every time he's in the lineup, maybe he's not going deep like you expected with his minor league numbers, but he's getting hits for you.
I like I'm with you. Like, I feel like this notion that, well, Dubon can't play first, he's not familiar, I think it's silly. I think you're disrespecting Mauricio Dubon's athleticism and defensive prowess. Like, he can play anywhere on the field, but he's not capable of playing first base. Like, give me a break. First base isn't, no offense to you first baseman out there, first baseman isn't as difficult as position as shortstop. It's not as difficult a position as center field. Are there nuances to every single position that you have to pick up on? Yes, there are nuances to every single position that you play. But I think that he's capable of picking it up. Now, he might show where he's like a little green here and there. But over the long haul, I think that he's fine at first base. I have no problem playing at first base. I would like them to use the hot hand there. Like, you got to go on matchups. You got a righty today, Estes, who hasn't pitched a lot in the big leagues, like 15 innings. But his 15 innings, he has huge splits where lefties crush him. So, okay, today's probably a day for Singleton. But also play the hot hand at times. I have no problem with Dubon at first base. Some people are, oh, he can't play first base. Like, no, yeah, he can. Like, if you can win Gold Glove at the utility spot, you can play first base.
We talked about it previously, too. I mean, if you've got soft hands and you're good at fielding a baseball and you've played infield, like, oh, by the way, Yuli Gurriel, you can be converted into playing some first base. And it ain't all that hard, and you can have some success. And if you're in a desperate mode, you can. Those are the kind of guys that are far easier to get to convert to play a few days at first base. It's just knowing where your foot is and what foot gets to the base, as opposed to sliding your feet and making quick throws with the infield. You're fielding more from throws than you are off the bat. But other than that, I have total confidence that Mauricio Dubon can be your backup first baseman when Singleton needs a break.
Most guys, unless they're huge sluggers, played other positions coming up prior to first base. Like, Bagwell played third.
Yeah, he did.
You mentioned Yuli. Yuli played middle infield in Cuba, mm-hmm. played third base, and then they moved him to first and never really played first base in his life, or at least not a whole lot of it. I find the notion to be very silly. And then last one, news, the Astros did trade Brandon Belak to the Oakland A's. He just has to, I mean, he hadn't been in the Astros clubhouse recently, but just has to go down the hall to join the Oakland single A's. He'll probably pitch tonight and shut the Astros down.
They set him down already. I think
they already optioned him down?
I think they optioned him to
I didn't think he had options.
Leagues. I thought that they said he was being assigned to, I thought I saw one of the tweets. I don't know if it was Chandler or. I thought someone said the A's are signing him, and then they've already assigned him or something like that. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know how you could do that. I mean, he didn't have options.
Okay.
He didn't have the they would have to DFA him again, and they
No, then I could have been wrong. I thought I read that somewhere, but regardless, look, I haven't been the biggest fan of Belak in his career, but especially lately, and you know it's tough. Because people know the names of Corey Jolks and Brandon Belak, but give them a chance to try and get a fresh start in a new organization where maybe they find something. I think we saw enough of Brandon Belak to know exactly what he was. He's an innings eater, whether it's a blowout one way or another. He's a spot starter, and occasionally he can find something to give you a quality start. But overall, I don't think his stuff and his arm strength is anything that you should feel bad about the fact that he's no longer an Astro.
No, I was gonna have fun with it. How much cash did you get? Because you traded him for. If we want to be serious about it, I would have kept Brandon Belak. I would have optioned Sean Dubin because I think that Brandon Belak's role on this team as a mop-up reliever actually pretty valuable, more valuable than what Dubin gives you currently. I think Dubin's a better pitcher. But Belak in that role, I think, suits him better because, 180 pitches in a week span. Not many people can do that, and I think that's Belak's value. But that's small peanuts.
Because I was going to say, just nitpicking a better pitcher, I think Belak can find the strike zone better than Dubin. I think Dubin probably has better stuff and a faster fastball. But, I mean, that's just another way of looking. I think what frustrates the hell out of me is Dubin can't find the zone. And he misses badly a lot, whereas at least when Belak was out there, he didn't have dominating stuff per se, but at least he could find the zone for you.
Astros lineup for tonight is out, and pretty standard lineup. Bregman's in the cleanup spot for the second day in a row, which, whatever. Altuve at second, Tucker in right, Jordan DH's, Bregman at third, Pena at short, Singleton back in the lineup at first, Estes a righty, big splits, no problem there. And then Yiner in center, Myers in center, Loperfido in left. I like that lineup, but, you know, give Myers in center field when you have a fly ball pitcher on the mound in Javier. I like that you have your lefties in there, Singleton, Loperfido, because you have a righty that has pretty big splits. If I'm going to nitpick this lineup, and I like it, I like this lineup, let's be clear, I would flip-flop Loperfido and Myers. I would have Loperfido 8, Myers 9, but I'm not going to die on that towel seal.
And that's fine. I mean, I can see it. I can see your way for sure. Again, you know, Jake has been hot of late, but I like the fact that Joey Loperfido's been very steady. I know there are people are saying he hasn't hit a home run yet. He's supposed to be a home run hitter. Right now you don't need that. You just need to get guys on base and keep setting the table. And so wherever he hits, I'm glad he's in the lineup again tonight because I want to see more of him.
Yeah, I think the power was going to come. I like that he's hitting 323. Like, yeah. This guy was like supposed to, and he is high strikeout, but it was like high strikeout. How much is that going to affect the batting average? And it's like, okay, he's not even hitting for his power yet, and he's still hitting 323. Yeah. The power will come with at bat. Speaking of Joey Loperfido, he is playing today. He did play yesterday. Now, how much he plays when Chaz McCormick comes back, I think it is going to be a question. If Loperfido isn't going to play, I'm going to tell you what the Astros should do with him. And then there's also this narrative, oh, bring up Pedro Leon. Why would you do that? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now I'll tell you about the good people at X Golf. I love the people at X Golf because they really know what they're doing. And they brought in the best golf simulators that I have ever been on and personally have experienced. And the only X Golf simulators in the Houston area are at X Golf Katy. It's absolutely fantastic. And you need to try them because on a day like today when it's raining, maybe you got a tee time, you're trying to get to the course after work, hit some balls, play some holes, and you can't do it. If you get to X Golf and Katy, you can, and it's realistic. It's just like you playing on the golf course, only you're doing it indoors. They've got Shot Tracker so that every single ball that you hit, it will tell you the distance, the direction, and everything that you need to know, including spin rate, on every shot so that you can work on your game. You want to work on chipping and putting? You can do that too. The most accurate putting simulators I've ever seen. Also, tomorrow night, they got Bourbon and Bunkers, a whiskey tasting event where you can taste a lot of great whiskey. You can play a closest to the pin contest on the simulators, and you probably can get your first experience on what won't be your last if you're a golfer and a sports fan at X Golf Katy. It's the best combination of a great sports bar with food and drink and unbelievable golf simulators where you can play 18 holes of golf in literally less than an hour, hour and a half, when normally it takes you 4 to 5 hours on the course. Check them out today. Go online. Check out X Golf Katy right now.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live from the Decoy Daily Specials. Happy hour until 7. You can get a Modelo for very, very cheap, which is always fun to do. 6941, looking forward to Milwaukee. They're looking good right now. The real eye test is right around the corner. Are you ever conflicted whenever Milwaukee
Never.
Plays? I know you're not.
My buddy actually asked me that, and my daughter asked me that last night. She's like, Daddy, the Brewers are coming to town. Who do you root for? And I said, I said, honey, I've been an Astros fan for years since we moved down here. I actually was thinking about it this morning after she asked me last night that I'm actually probably of all the sports teams that I'm a fan of, I'm probably a bigger Astros fan than right now than maybe even a Packer fan.
Yeah. This texter says, ha, I brought up Dubon at first a while back and y'all laughed it off. I don't think that was us.
No, I don't think we laughed at anything. I think the one thing that you've been quick to bring up is he has so much value as the utility guy that can be used all over the place that, you know, you don't know if that's where you want to use him and use him in a game at first base. And that's, I think, when we still had Abreu and Singleton on the roster.
Now, see, if you're talking about Dubon relative to the rest of Major League Baseball, I don't think he's a very good first baseman in the sense that he doesn't hit for enough power to be like the average first baseman in Major League Baseball. But you can't compare yourself to the average. You have to compare yourself to what you have on the roster. And Dubon getting some run at first base is fine by me. Should he be there every day? I wouldn't say he should be there every day. Like, it depends on the matchups. It depends on who's playing well. I don't mind Singleton. Like, Singleton's in the lineup today. Dubon's not. I'm okay with that. The pitcher for Oakland has huge splits. He's a righty. Give Singleton an opportunity. And if Singleton catches fire, keep Singleton in the lineup. If Singleton's ice cold, Dubon's red hot, then play Dubon. So I'm okay playing the hot hand.
That's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is you need production out of your corners on the infield, but more so when you're looking at what the Astros were getting in terms of lack of production at first base. Sure, it's easy to say the major league average for a first anybody playing first base on a team to get these kind of stats is one thing. You were getting absolutely nothing when Singleton was platooning. So you just needed a better offensive option at first base, period.
Some people have been frustrated with how much Loper Fido has played. Now, this will be the second day in a row that he's in the lineup, so that's cool. Center field yesterday, which if you're going to play him in center field some, Espada was wise to do it behind Fromber.
Yeah.
Because Fromber's a ground ball pitcher. I think there was only one fly ball yesterday.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, so it's he used to do it with Jordan in left. Like, when does Jordan play left? When Fromber's on the mound. Why? Because Fromber gives up ground balls. Jordan's not going to have to play a whole lot in left. So it's a way to, like, appease him without actually appeasing him. Same thing with Loper Fido. Like, Loper Fido's range isn't as good as Myers, and I question if it's good enough to be, like, an everyday center fielder. I really don't think that it is. But if you're going to do it sometimes, it's good to do it when Fromber is on the mound. So that's why I like Myers in center field behind Javier, because Javier is a fly ball pitcher. Hopefully Myers has an opportunity to catch some of those fly balls. But Loper Fido's played left. He hasn't played any first base, and he hasn't played a whole lot. So when Chaz McCormick comes back and Loper Fido's playing, let's say, less than once every three games, you should just go ahead and send him back to the minors.
Yeah.
And if you're going to send him back to the minors, what you need to do, because we're talking about first base, is he needs to play every single day at first. So whenever you bring Chaz McCormick back up, and Loper Fido is not playing more than once every three games, he needs to go to Sugar Land, and he needs to play every single game at first. And then when you make the determination that, okay, I'm comfortable playing him at first base, that's when you bring him back up, and then you give him an opportunity to be in that first base rotation. But if you're not going to play him more than once every three games, he should be in the minors grooming himself at first base.
Yeah, because he's not going to forget how to play outfield, and we know that he's been working with Bagwell previously to where that's a position where if he hones his skills even more to get ready to play first on the major league level, that it can only help him with position versatility. But let's just be real about the fact that if you had the guys that weren't hitting previous to this, we just got done talking about the two guys who weren't doing it at first base, it's a different conversation. And also, on top of that, if you're looking at the guys that have been platooning on outfield spots, it'd be one thing if a lot of the guys were struggling to hit. Trey Cabbage even got a hit last night. The guys you're putting out there every day, we got done talking about Loper Fido being a guy not having the home runs but hitting the base hits. But you know that Dubon's getting base hits. You know that Jake has been getting base hits. When you get those guys, it's a good problem to have, but there's going to be times and days where you're going to get a very good hitter or a guy that's been hot that's not going to be in the lineup because you have too many guys right now that are on a little bit of a heater, and this team's behind the eight ball a little bit, and they need to make sure that you know they keep it rolling.
Because if you have a surplus of, like, above-average outfielders, and if you're not going to play him that much, then he needs to be learning to play first base. Because where can he – you still have to think – I know that you're, like, in this hole and you're, you know, chasing to get back under 2.500 and you're chasing in the division. I know that. And I know that you can't have, like, the mindset of everything that you do is thinking long-term. But where can Loper Fido help you the most this year? I think it's at first base in the summer. Like, if Singleton, you know, and Singleton's not, like, hot. Singleton's held his head above water, but it's not like Singleton's been playing at an average first base pace. If we're talking about Dubon being capable at first base but not enough to handle that job full time, if Abreu never comes back from West Palm Beach, where can Loper Fido help you the most? At first base. And if you're not comfortable playing him at first base and you're playing Dubon over him at first base and he's playing less than once every three games, he needs to be in Sugar Land playing first base every single game until he is ready in your mind defensively to where he can be on the big league team helping you on that front.
Yeah, you're not struggling as much as you were as a team, you're right. You know, in the fact that, yes, it is something to say that you are still under 500, you're still chasing teams in the division, but you're playing better baseball. But he's too young, and he's too big of a prospect in your system right now that if he's not going to play frequently, that he should be honing his skills to try and find a way to break back into the lineup, and when you break back in, have more versatility to give you more options to actually get at-bats. Because you're grooming this kid to be a part of your future unless there's a big trade somewhere down the line where it's too good to say no, and he becomes an asset piece that you can move. But for the time being, he's one of your better prospects. He's got a ton of ability. He's proven he can hit major league pitching. Now it's just a matter of finding a spot for him, because if you can't, that is big picture and small picture in the fact that for the big picture, but also if he's not going to get the reps now, get him ready when he does get the next set of reps to be able to play at first base too, so that he can give you multiple options at different positions, which you didn't have at the start of the year.
Yeah, I just don't love that he's like this utility player. And it's not going to be easier when Chaz makes his way back. Not that that's imminent.
Do you think that even because I saw the interview after the game last night, and he was talking about he's good on his at-bats.
Yeah.
You know, he feels good, at least with his running. He hasn't gotten a lot of reps in the outfield. Is that something they slow roll a little bit because they've been getting enough production out of all these other guys to say, hey, stay down in Corpus, get some more reps at outfield while we continue to roll this out, at least through the end of the homestand?
Yeah, I think he even kind of tipped that in his interview because he was asked like about his plan. He's like, I don't even know the plan. And it's like, if you
I thought that was snarky a little bit.
It could have been. Maybe it was snark. Maybe it was half snark. Maybe half he really doesn't know the plan. Because I think so. Like, why you're not in a hurry to call him up if he's going 0 for 5 and he's not hitting all that well yet? Why are you bringing him up? Like, it just creates an even bigger log jam. And if you're not going to play him whenever he is up, now he's going to get cold again. So like, you got to get him hot now. You are up against the clock because you have 20 days on the rehab assignment, but it's been less than a week, so it's not like that's imminent. He's not banging on the door. So yeah, I think they will slow play it.
I think if Cabbage was doing nothing for you, and when he did get opportunities, he wasn't really seizing them too. It's probably an easier move, but then he's going to expect to play because one thing that we do know is not that he's over easy, but at the same time. That's why I thought he was snarky last night. I think he already expects that he's healthy enough that he should be up with the big league club or be ready to, and he probably is not getting his wish or being told what he wants to hear. So that's probably a deal within itself. But at the same time, if you're trying to win baseball games and the guys you got right now are contributing, there's no need to rush into any decision.
7557, we're talking about chasing games, but are we really worried about that right now? 5.5 games back, less than 50 games in. It's all good. It'll be fine. The macro view over micro is still fine with me. Let's develop our guys. I'm with you. 9842, I don't understand why you don't put Loperfido at first if you're going to give Singleton a day off. The whole reason he got brought up was because the position was a black hole. Then Singleton picks it up, and that's fine, but Singleton isn't going to be your long-term solution, and Dubon definitely isn't going to be. To me, they've had two opportunities to play Loperfido at first. Last night, Singleton got the day off, who played first, Dubon, and then they had that extra inning game in the 10th where Cabbage, Loperfido, and Dubon were all on the field at the same time, and they chose to play Dubon at first, Cabbage in left, and Loperfido in center. So I don't think they feel he is ready defensively to play first base at the big league level. They've told us.
They definitely did. The writing was on the wall after especially the extra inning game. You saw that. And then when we saw Dubon starting to take more reps at first base too, you're like, well, to me, that not only screams that he's not ready yet to play first base, but the fact is that from my personal point of view, I don't like him in center field. I don't know that, you know, you're right, and people are going to maybe want to argue with you, but there's no question in my mind that Jake's a way better center fielder than Joey Loperfido, but I'm not sure Joey Loperfido is a center fielder in Major League Baseball.
713-780-ESPN. There's been a lot of Pedro Leon's killing AAA, like top prospect, has never really had the numbers to back up his, I guess, prowess or like how much he's decorated as a prospect up until this year. And this year he's having this huge year. I have friends that, hey, why aren't they calling up Pedro Leon? You see it on Astros here. Why aren't they calling up Pedro Leon? Why would you call up Pedro Leon right now?
I'm talking about how deep in the outfield is right now with guys that are actually doing their jobs and hitting the baseball. Why in the hell do you want to bring him up now, too, and throw him into the mix when you know that of all the guys hitting the baseball, we just also mentioned Chaz is clamoring to get back on that roster real quick. I don't think there should be any desire right now to call him up.
If Myers was struggling, if Dubon was struggling, if Loperfido was struggling, if Chaz was here and struggling, okay, I can hear that conversation. He's played multiple positions in the past, Pedro Leon. He's sticking to the outfield. Like, he's sticking to center field this year. They've gotten rid of experimenting with him on the dirt, so there is not a reason to bring up Pedro Leon right now. A secondary thought, and I don't think this is the case. I'm just throwing this out there as a plausibility. Maybe they think Pedro Leon right now is smoke and mirrors, or they believe more his career, not just 2024, and they don't want to expose him to big league pitching and then diminish his value.
Yeah, because I was going to say, from an asset standpoint, that means a whole lot more than trying to find out the reality that they were right. Yeah, I totally can get behind that because they don't have the farm system of a lot of teams. They may need to have prospects. And I go back to the De La Cruz trade a couple years ago where there was a guy that basically no one had looked at, thought about, or had value to across baseball, and he wasn't a top 100 prospect. He got hot for a year for Sugar Land or half a year. became a trade piece that got you someone else's closer in Yimi Garcia that became a part of your pennant stretch run, great. Then keep his value up because there is really no place for him right now on the major league team.
6383, once Chaz comes back, do you think Joey will get to play first base? I think it's possible in Sugarland. 6690, could one of the prominent Astros be Chaz McCormick? He's talking about the prominent Astros in that Nightingale story. We know Chaz McCormick likes talking to beat writers.
Yeah, we do.
So, yeah, I would say that he could be one of the more likely ones. 7869, did they slow Pedro Leon's growth by trying to make him as an infielder?
No, I don't think so. I think, honestly, having seen him up close and personal when we were out in Sugarland, I was surprised at just how small he is. It seems like he would be a natural middle infielder type fit in Major League Baseball. But if he's going to play the outfield, he's just going to play center, right?
Yeah, size doesn't matter to me. I mean, you have Altuve, you have Bregman, like they're tiny guys as well. It's more about the personality of the player, I think. But 7869 says, did they slow his growth? I think that there is something to that. Like, it's hard to quantify and it's hard to, like, actually define. But whenever you're, like, there's a reason that guys are pitchers only. There's a reason that guys specialize in certain things. So I think it's possible. It's very hard to, like, prove. You can prove it. But I do think it's in play. But I would say that the biggest reason for his growth is his change of approach at the plate. Like, he's not chasing at stuff anymore. He has better command. He's got better plate discipline. I would say that's the biggest reason for his growth this year. But I'm not going to dismiss that, 7869. I do think that it's on the table. I just can't define to you how much and prove it to you. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I have a path to the playoffs for the Texans. A path to the playoffs. Do you believe me? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
We'll get to the Texans' schedule. Did the NFL do them favors? Did they hurt them? We'll tell you about why every single Houston Texans opponent stinks a little bit later. We are broadcasting live from the Decoy in Spring Branch. Today is a Thursday. It's a throwback Thursday. $2 off tequila shots, $100 select bottles, Tito's, Fireball amongst them. Everyday happy hours, happy hour daily until 7 o'clock. $3 Modelo's, $4 Fireball, $5 wine, $6 Tito vodka. So this is your spot for happy hour. They're having a volleyball tournament here this weekend. Always a great time. You can book a volleyball court, cornhole lane, right now. Get out of the rain, get here, have a pop, or be here this weekend. Always your spot. Plus, it's your spot to watch fights, too. No cover ever for UFC or for boxing. All right, here's my path to the playoffs. I like to look at it from a – I like to look at it as a series, kind of bunch, like a selection of games. And then it's okay, like do this in this amount of games. Like last year, Homer had in my way to 9 wins, which Homer had's pretty wise. That Homer had guy knows what he's talking about. Homer had it to 9 last year, and they got to 10. So I look at this as a 3-game pocket, a 3-game pocket, a 3-game pocket, then the 4 games going into the bye, and then the 4 games going out of the byes. So you have 5 different pockets for the Houston Texans this year. They open against Indy on the road. They're home for Chicago. They're at Minnesota. That's the first pocket. It might be their easiest pocket of the year because it's a very difficult schedule. We all know that. 4th toughest in the NFL when you look at 2023 strength of record. We know that it's 6 national TV games, 4 of which are in primetime. You know, a fun schedule. It's a difficult schedule. It's a daunting schedule. And in that pocket, I think it's the easiest pocket. Take 2 of 3. I'm not telling you to sweep it. Take 2 of 3. At Indy, that's going to be a coin flip game. Texans are favored, but I think they opened it at what? I think they're favored by 1.5, 2.5.
I saw up to 2.5.
So 2.5.
2.5 to 1.5. So 1.5 to 2.5.
They're a 60% chance to win that game. It's like they can lose it, but they're a 60% chance to win that game. Home versus Chicago when Caleb Williams is a rookie in his second ever game. That's going to be, you're probably going to be favored by 5.5 points in that one.
Probably.
And then on the road at Minnesota, who knows who their quarterback is, but I'm not going to be scared of anybody, whoever their quarterback is. So that's another easily winnable game. So all 3 of these games are probably going to be favored. I'm not even telling you to sweep it. Just go 2-1.
Sure.
Start off 2-1. All right, here you go. 2-1 on the season. The next pocket, I think is actually another easy pocket. Home against Jacksonville, they'll be improved. Home versus Buffalo, Buffalo's still going to be a playoff caliber team. And then at New England, I don't think much of New England. Two of these games are at home. Again, just take 2 of 3. Go 2-1. Do that, you're at 4-2. The next three game pockets where things get a little bit more difficult. At Green Bay, they're going to be good in my opinion. Home versus Indy, another game that's probably a 65-35 game. And then at New York, who knows what they'll be because of Aaron Rodgers. But again, just go 2-1. That's all I'm asking you to do. Don't sweep it. Just take 2 of 3. If you do that in the first three pockets of the year, you're looking at a 6-3 start through 9. Who's not taking that? Four games going into the bye. Comes a little bit more difficult. Home versus Detroit, one of the favorites in the NFC, at Dallas, they suck. Home for Tennessee at Jacksonville. Look, I don't think much of Tennessee. Jacksonville, you've shown that you're capable of winning at Jacksonville. Detroit's tough, but it's at home. Dallas, Houston owns Dallas. I'm not even saying winning record here. Go 2-2 in that stretch. I'm not going to go crazy here. Go 2-2 in that stretch. So that puts you now at 8-5. Okay, you positioned yourself nicely. Now, after the bye is a tough stretch, especially the first three. Home versus Miami, you're at Kansas City on Saturday, 3 days rest, and then you're playing home for Baltimore on Christmas Day, and then the final game of the year, you're at Tennessee, which, you know, the rival, if you want to call it that. Tennessee's obviously the easiest team of this stretch. Go 2-2 again. Just go 2-2. 10-7 record. You win the division. You're back into the playoffs. Who says no?
I'll take it here, right here and now, because I know that when we've talked about this in the past, you know, BMAC, I think you were probably the most overzealous of us in terms of how many wins they were going to get. I look at that schedule and say, if you can come out of that schedule, the first place schedule, with all those good quarterbacks on it, then I'll take 10-7 all day, every day. I believe that's good enough to get into the playoffs, and then I'll roll the dice with CJ and company in the playoffs and feel good about it. The big thing when you do it that way, and I like that you started doing that. I know that the Killer G's stole that from you, and I heard it this morning. But I guess that's the most sincere form of flattery when they were talking about it.
Killer G's?
Yeah, the Killer G's.
What did they have? What did they have that at? Was it kind of the same structure?
Joe George said, "I like to break up the schedule into quarters or in pockets."
And yeah, I mean, like, I'm not unique. I wasn't the innovator.
No, but I like that, but because I think. But here's the thing: what we've talked about in the past then becomes paramount to that coming to fruition that you just carved out for us. That is, take advantage of the teams you're supposed to beat too, because the problem a year ago was you were supposed to beat Atlanta, you were supposed to beat the Jets with Zach Wilson, you were supposed to beat Carolina. When you don't do those, now it puts more pressure on you to win another one of those games in those pockets that otherwise you were like, hey, I can roll with that. Then there's a sense of urgency.
You got to get it back.
Yeah,
you got to get it back,
because exactly.
Like the first stretch, you're supposed to go 2-1. If you were to, like, lose at Indy and then you lose for some reason at Minnesota, you lose the road games, you're 1-2, well, then now you probably need to sweep the next pocket. But it's also a good way to, like, as you're going through the year. It's like, okay, well, you lose in week two. That's okay. You wanted to go 2-1 in your first three anyways. So you can have that as your bar throughout. And I think the 10 wins is, like, a solid bar with this schedule. I think it does win the division.
Yep.
It might be tied. It might be a playoff race towards the end. But I think it wins the division. And I think 10 wins, now it's a little bit easier to miss the playoffs nowadays. No, it's not. It's easier to make the playoffs because there's an extra
spots.
Team.
Yep.
So
10
wins gets you into the postseason. I know sometimes it might not, but I feel comfortable saying 10 wins is going to get you in. Give me the 10 wins against this schedule. Get into the postseason with Stroud and this offense and a defense that hopefully is good, and then you make some hay once you're there.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, too, looking at it in that way allows you to stay more even-keeled. Like if you get off to a hot start, maybe you catch all three right off the bat. Then you realize, hey, if we do take one that lose one, take one in the shorts that we were supposed to win, but that's okay. We got an extra game there. We're going to be okay. We're going to be fine. We still are in a good position. It's where you also start facing the panic of going, I got to put the pedal down a little bit because I did lose a couple of those easy games that I had, you know, the coaches all kind of do the same thing we do and realize, hey, it's going to get tougher. The opponents are tougher. The amount of days that you're going to have and where you're playing the games, it's going to matter more. We might want to have to really press the urgency button with the guys for a couple of weeks because we dropped something that we, when we looked at the whole schedule, thought we were going to be in a better position coming out of it.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN.
I'm looking at the schedule as you're going through it. I mean, obviously the toughest stretch is, as you mentioned, is after the bye with Dolphins, Chiefs, Ravens, Titans. You have to get into those four, that stretch of four games, to me, as you broke it down, at 8-5 or better. If you don't get into that last four, or 8-5 or better, I think we'll already know where the Texans season is in, because you cannot count on anything better than 2-2 in that last four-game stretch. And I do think, as you're breaking it down, I believe you went 2-1 on those previous stretches.
Yep, everyone.
everyone. I do think there is a stretch or two where you can maybe I would even pencil in a 3-0, but then there's another stretch with that Packers, Colts, and Jets where I might pencil in a 1-2. So that kind of balances out. But overall, you have to get into the bye at 8-5, or we're probably going to look at the 2025 season for the Houston Texans.
I wanted to go conservative. Like, I didn't want to, like this texture says that I know it doesn't work like this, but the Texans should be 9-0 going into the Lions game. I think that you could have the best team in the NFL, and that if you're like saying that a team should be 9-0, that you're not being realistic. It's the NFL. Like the NFL is so difficult to win.
There's nine winnable games.
And even I think you'll be favored in all nine.
Even look at the Niners a year ago, or the Eagles. The Eagles a year ago were 10-1. They came out ferocious, and everybody was penciling them into the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And then you have to kind of space it out too, and pace yourself so that you're ready for the second half and ready and healthy for the playoffs. You'd love to have that Tennessee game not matter in the last week
Absolutely.
Of the season. But because you're coming out of that gauntlet of those three games and the shorter period of time, you're just hoping you're in a position where it doesn't matter as much, or that you don't need that game.
Yeah, I think it's unfair to say a team should be 9-0. That a team, any NFL team, should be 9-0. Like if you're the best team playing the worst team in the league every single week, I still think it's unfair to say that team should be 9-0.
I mean, how many teams throughout history start 9-0 or better?
Probably more than we think.
But again, we go back.
I would say it's less than an average of one team per year, though.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a very unrealistic or unfair expectation.
And we just go back again to that same Texans team with that same schedule a year ago and say, well, if you think they should be 9-0, or they will be 9-0, well then that you damn well better not do what you did last year, because you were supposed to beat those three teams you didn't.
Now to the Texters' defense, I think they're favored in at least eight of those nine. They're already favored at Indy.
So what is the one you don't think they're
favored? Let's go through
it.
They'll be favored against Chicago. They'll be favored at Minnesota. They'll be favored at home against Jacksonville. Are they favored at home against Buffalo?
Yes.
I think it depends on the start.
Yeah, exactly.
But if they were handicapping that game today, I think they'd be favored. I think it'd be about a point. Maybe a point.
I think there's three teams that.
Let's keep going. At New England, they'll be favored in that game. At Green Bay, this is where I don't think they'll be favored.
I would lean no. Depending on the start, I would lean no.
If we're handicapping it now, I think they're a 1-1.5 point dog.
Yeah, there's
game.
Three games, and that's another one that depends on the start for every.
Well, ahead of Detroit.
For both teams, but I'm saying that was another one on my list that going into Lambeau. Now, it's good that there's not going to be snow in October, but at the same time, that's a tough place to play.
A home for Indy, they'll be favored if they're favored on the road.
Yep.
If we're handicapping it today. At New York, if we're handicapping it today?
It depends on
we're handicapping it today.
Handicapping today, I would say the Jets are favored just because they're a public team.
You think Jets are flavored?
Jets are favored by a point and a half.
I think I said flavored. There's no flavor up there.
Yeah, point and a half.
You think the Jets are favored by a point and a half?
At least.
I don't.
At least. I do.
They
improved their defense. And if Rodgers is healthy, they gave him more weapons. They improved the offensive line. At home in New York, I think they'd be favored.
I think it's a pick'em.
People are going to remember what happened last year. The Texans, I mean, not only did you lose to Zach Wilson, their defense kicked your ass.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an absolute beatdown that the Jets defense
gave
the Texans offense.
All right, so you said
so I think they're
on Jets. I mean, y'all voted me, so that's two.
Underdog,
so Green Bay and the Jets.
Underdog at two games before the Lions.
So if we just go strictly off how it's handicapped today, they'd
Buffalo?
Be 7-2. No, I think they're favored at home against Buffalo.
Well, I think you were maybe on the fence on that.
I thought that was depending on how Buffalo starts.
Let's finish the exercise. Yeah. Are they favored home against Detroit right now today?
No, I would lean no.
I think they are I think it's the same thing. I think at home on Sunday night, I think by a point and a half.
I think so too. At Dallas?
I would say
I don't think so.
Let's go 1-1 between Detroit and Dallas, because I think we're both probably all on the fence on those two. Home for Tennessee.
Favored.
At Jacksonville.
They play well there too.
I think they're favored.
Yeah.
Probably like a point and a half.
Home versus Miami?
Yeah, at home, yes.
Yeah.
At KC?
Underdog.
No. Home versus Baltimore?
Underdog.
At Tennessee?
Favorite.
So we had five underdogs.
Okay.
We had five. If they're handicapping today, we had five underdogs.
12 and
we
7.
We have at Green Bay. We had at the Jets. We have
12 and 5.
Either Detroit or Dallas. That's three. We had at Kansas City 4. We had home versus Baltimore 5.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go strictly off how they'd be handicapped today, us predicting it, that's 12 games they'd
12
be favored.
12 and 5,
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. What do you think of the schedule? 713-780-3776. Also, we're going to tell you in three words or less why every single opponent the Houston Texans play suck. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I got to tell you about Sinlon. I know you've been thinking about turf for your yard, whether it's because you're tired of mowing. It's easier to maintain. It's nicer. It's beautiful. Better for the kids, better for the pets, whatever your reason, maybe to get your weekends back. I know that you've been thinking about it, and if you've been thinking about it, you need to reach out to Sinlon. Why not? Sinlon will give you a free consultation, free estimate. Then you can decide, but at least know your options. The greenest turf company, not just in color, but also in theory. I saw a picture of what they were doing the other day. They had this little, they had the putting green in the backyard, tucked away in the corner, real nice. You had the turf around the pavers. It was nestled nicely around the pool. Unbelievable. 365 days a year, it looks perfect. And Sinlon's products are the best in the game. Top of the line products that are made right here in the USA. Lifetime warranty, in-house crews. You don't have to worry about the nightmares of a job that's contracted out. That's always terrible. Fully insured, fully bonded, the customer service elite. Sinlon controls the process from yarn to yard. Sinlon created the industry. They're the sister company to the AstroTurf that you find in the Dome. Sinlon has nearly two decades in the games and the only turf company in Texas that can say they've done that. Go to 975sinlon.com to learn more. That's 975sinlon.com, 975sinlon.com to improve your yard today. Sinlon, artificial grass never looked more natural.
ESPN 97.5.